As you know, Apple makes the best notebooks on the planet. Well, today we're introducing a third kind of notebook. This is the MacBook Air.
Podcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. It's me, Erfan Elijah, your host. Joining me today, the Luigi to my Mario, Buster Chayn.
Hello.
I thought you were going to do a Luigi voice for me.
I was, but I thought it
I don't even know what Luigi sounds like. He sounds probably exactly like Mario.
Probably, yeah.
And of course, no Mario Brothers game is complete without the evil turtle. Taking on that role happily is our own Leander Caney, the evilest turtle in the land. Yeah, are you familiar with any of the Mario Brothers stuff, Leander?
No, only through my son Olin, but not really.
Okay, that's too bad, because we're going to be talking about Super Mario Brothers this episode, and of course all of the other Nintendo IP that is going to be coming to your iOS devices. Finally, I have been saying that they needed to do this for so long, and for the longest time, Nintendo just did not want to give up any of their games to any other platforms besides the Nintendo consoles and handheld units. But that is all changing, so we're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be talking about the Force Touch trackpad on the MacBook Air, or the MacBook Pro, excuse me, has been getting really good reviews. And so I want to talk to you guys a bit about that. And we're also going to be covering the Apple TV streaming service potentially coming in June. And we talked a little bit about the future of Apple TV last episode. And I just think now its future is just bright and shiny. And so I want to talk about Apple TV and where it fits in Apple strategy, where it fits in the home, because it seems like it's going to be doing all sorts of crazy cool things, and everyone's going to end up eventually probably having one. So with all that said, before we jump into the Funcast, that was just totally natural. I feel like we should change the name to the Funcast. Maybe okay. Not. Maybe not.
Trying to bring the fun. Yeah, I'm trying to find.
I like having the fun be implied, so we could just leave it as the Cultcast. Before we hop into the show, I want to thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode. FreshBooks is the easy-to-use invoicing software designed to help small business owners get organized, save time invoicing, and get paid faster. I can vouch for this. I use FreshBooks. Leander uses FreshBooks. Buster uses FreshBooks. Alex uses FreshBooks. I mean, literally, like,
we're a FreshBook family, yeah.
We're the FreshBook family. That's us. We're the FreshBook family. You can try it out yourself for free at FreshBooks.com/cultcast. And please enter cultcast in the How Did You Hear About Us section. You can get a free 30-day trial to try it yourself. And I also want to thank Harry's for supporting this episode. I feel like, Leander, you should say Harry's. Can you say
Harry's? Harry's.
Harry's. Because Harry's is like this very, like, it's like a regal sounding brand, and you have the regal sounding accent. So it's appropriate to have you do it. Harry's makes super sharp German made razors that ship right to your door for way less than drugstore prices, for less than Amazon's prices. These guys wanted to try to figure out how to create a great razor that they could ship directly to consumers. They're super sharp, very high quality, and beautifully designed. I have some myself. You can learn more at harrys.com, and you could save $5 off any first order with code CULTCAST at checkout. And here's why you should check it out. So you guys know how expensive razors are. And if you're...
Yeah, just bought some Gillette, the five-blade ones.
Yeah, and these are five-blade too. How much were they? Do you remember, Leander?
Something crazy. I was like, what? I was really gonna shoplift him just because I was so outraged.
I wish you would have, because that would have made this conversation so much more interesting.
And I remember they always have the little thing on them, the RFID tag.
Do they make you go into like that plastic box that they always have at the store and like have some security guard pat you down first, and then he like unlocks it
Yeah. Yeah, usually that's the thing, right? You can't find anybody, and they have to open up the little cupboard, and then they escort you to the to the checkout.
And the whole time, like, the guard has his hand on his firearm. Like, if you try to take off with him, he's just gonna he's just gonna end you right there.
He's checking you if we're gonna book it, right? No, for some reason these were out in the open, but that's usually the experience.
Maybe
it's not
you should have stolen.
And then of course I never know which ones are the right ones for the razor. I'm always buying the wrong ones.
So the ones I used to buy were I think they were $14 for four. You know, like, they're super duper expensive. That was on Amazon. So at the drugstore, I can only imagine how much they cost. You can get a 8-pack of Harry's razors for $15. That includes shipping. So the way it works is you order like their starter pack, and they have a few different ones for you to choose from. In fact, the one I'd recommend is the Truman set, which is $15. And after $5 off with code CULTCAST at checkout, you get it for $10. So they're going to send you their moisturizing shaving cream, a blade handle, and three razors for $10, just so you can try it. And if you like that, you can sign up for one of their subscription models. And I think their least expensive one is $15 for 8 blades. It depends on how often you shave, every month or every 3 months. And as I said, that's shipped straight to your door. I don't think you could find a lesser expensive set of high quality razors, unless you want to buy like those like really cheap plastic ones that like the ladies use to shave their legs. Or if you want to do it really cheaply, you could just, you know, borrow your lady's, the one that she uses on her legs, and shave your face with that. I wouldn't recommend it because you'll probably cut like a layer of your skin off. But if you are in need of some good razors, you want to up your game, you're into manscaping like I am, you want to start with your face and then experiment from then on. see where it goes. Hey, you know what? There's a whole competitive world out there of manscaping, and I've won several awards. I'm happy to give you some tips on Twitter or something.
Okay.
But if you need the right tools for the job, Harry's has got you covered. That's HARRYS.com, and that's code CULTCAST at checkout. I want to thank Harry's for supporting this episode and for supporting the professional sport of manscaping. Okay, guys, let's start with the big news in my week. Leander, I have a feeling you're going to be awfully quiet during this discussion. It's just going to be me and Buster, but that's okay.
Okay.
The big news this week was Nintendo has finally said they're going to bring their games to iOS, not just iOS, Android devices. I don't know if they're going to do Windows, but all different platforms.
Well, there's a caveat there because it's not necessarily that they're going to bring their games. They said they're going to bring Nintendo properties over.
Okay, so I'm glad you brought this up right off the bat. Destroy my my enthusiasm here.
Sorry.
So Nintendo did say that they are going to maintain their premium experiences on their own platforms. So Wii U, 3DS. But smartphones and tablets are going to end up with Nintendo branded products. I still think this is fine, and here's why, Buster. Were you ever like a console guy, like when you were growing up, Nintendo, Genesis, anything?
No, not really. I mean, okay. I played video games, but not really.
What was your favorite console?
I didn't really have one. No.
Okay. So it's just me. It's just me. So Buster and Leander are gonna not say anything during this conversation. I'm just going to talk to myself about this. Here's why this is a big deal. This Nintendo has not been doing great for the last several years. I mean, the Wii was very popular, and then it kind of waned, and the Wii U has kind of struggled to find an audience besides, you know, Nintendo fanboys and people who are generally older. Like, a lot of the guys, it's kind of weird. The guys that I know that carry around like the handheld Nintendo products, like 3DS, are all kind of like in their 30s.
It's like my, I have a brother-in-law, loves them. Like, all, you know, just,
does he take it?
Huh? He's super nerdy, you know.
Does he take it to the mall and take it to like events and stuff?
Yeah.
Because the thing about the 3DS is, I guess when you take it places, it mates with other owners, and like you can get little digital rewards for that. I don't have a 3DS, so I can't really speak to it intelligently. But Nintendo, besides that audience, has not really been doing very well. And I've always said they need to get these kids in the door, right? You got to hook them when they're young, right?
Yeah.
And now Nintendo, so even though they're not going to be maybe premium experiences like Super Mario Brothers or anything like that, they're going to have the characters brought to iOS devices. And Nintendo has Zelda, they have Metroid, they have Mario Brothers, they have Bowser, they have Wario. I mean, they have a whole world of stuff.
Yeah, they have great, great properties and everything. I don't know. I feel like Nintendo's been struggling ever since the GameCube, really. Like the Wii was kind of just an aberration from its suckiness, I think.
The Wii did really well, but I think it kind of alienated like the hardcore Nintendo fans. Yeah. Because the GameCube was a controller-based console, and then the Wii U was just kind of wacky with the motion controls and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to play like Zelda games or something like that on my iPhone. My fear is like with this is that when they're bringing it, it's going to be like really dumb games, like a Maze Runner or something, or Jungle Run, Temple Run, only with Mario or something like that, you know, and just like knockoffs of like popular iOS themes and stuff and with a Nintendo character.
But I think that's okay, and here's why. Nintendo has always been very industrious in creating new experiences, and I think we're going to see things come to the iPhone. We're going to see things come to the iPad. These things are going to interact with maybe the Nintendo console in ways that we've never seen before, we've never experienced before. And so it's going to compel a whole new generation of kids and young people to maybe buy Nintendo products. And that's good for all of us because really, I mean, I don't really know very many people that own a Nintendo console, and I've kind of been worried about them. I kind of wonder how they're going to keep going because no one seems to really be excited about their products, you know, except for
Are they sponsoring this podcast?
I wish they were, actually.
Leander, what do you think about this whole thing?
We're going to be quiet for a moment.
You're living in a different universe.
What do you mean?
I mean, there's no way that's going to happen. It's like Buster says, they're going to do some sucky games with Nintendo characters, and they're out of the hardware. I mean, they're never going to come back.
Yeah.
Like, no. Age, I don't agree with that at all.
Consoles are on the ropes, and being in the console game is crazy. What are they going to bring? What can they do?
You think consoles are on the ropes, as in people are moving to mobile gaming? Is that the point that you're making?
Well, at the Nintendo end, yeah.
I spend a lot of time playing Vainglory on my iPhone.
As you said, Buster, you're not an avid console gamer. And sure, when I hear people make that argument, I always think,
here's the thing, totally different experiences. But like what Leander's saying is, you're saying I'm not a console gamer. Like it's an insult. Like
No, I don't mean to. I mean, I did raise my nose into the air.
The console gaming, like a whole market, I feel like that's struggling. You know, it's like you guys are the hardcore console gamers.
Whoa, what do you mean by you guys?
You guys? Seems how you told me I'm not one of them.
No, I wasn't meaning that in a disparaging way. Maybe slightly snooty. Only slightly.
But seriously, though, I do think like gaming is bigger and it's huger and everybody plays games now because Apple made the iPhone and the iPad, which are like the best gaming devices in the world. Like I saw like some Reddit question today. It was like, why hasn't Apple made a serious gaming play? And it's like, dude, like the App Store and the iPad, like those are awesome gaming devices and it's changed everything.
I wouldn't, well, they are great, but they're totally like different, dude, consoles. Like, they're,
you
totally
ask consoles. Any little kid if they'd rather play with a Wii U or an iPad, and they will take the iPad any day. I swear.
I don't know. Once you've played Luigi's Haunted Mansion on the Wii U, going to an iPad game, I don't know. It's definitely not as high quality.
I just think,
some great games on the iPad. I'm not disagreeing with you, but that touch experience is just totally different than having a controller in your hand.
Here's where it really turned for me was this season of House of Cards. Like, no spoilers, but like if you've seen season one, Frank is like a huge Xbox gamer. He plays like Call of Duty and stuff. But in season three, while he's president, instead of playing like hardcore games, like his favorite new game is Monument Valley on the iPad. Mm-hmm. I just think that's kind of like the change of times, you know, because it's more casual and the quality and the graphics aren't as hardcore as a console, but it's just the ability to play wherever and, you know, casually. I think that's where it's moving.
I think that iOS games are additive. What were you going to say, Leander?
Well, I don't know. You know, like if you, Mario and all the Nintendo games, you know, back in their day, they were the, you know, they would bleed into the culture, right? So everyone knew who Mario was and all the games. You know, they got buzz outside of that, that, you know, the community of the gamers. And I think, you know, the latest one that I heard about was like Clicky Road, which is an iPad game. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, you know, for that demographic, I totally agree that, you know, there's the high end gaming consoles are as healthy as ever. Didn't they just got sold? They just beat some records, right? With the, for the PlayStation 4.
Oh, the PlayStation 4 is just we're selling.
So the high end graphics for the, you know, the Xbox and the PlayStation 4, there's definitely going to be a market for that, right? And for high end PCs, but for, you know, mainstream sort of, you know, child oriented gaming, which is where Nintendo used to rule, I think definitely it's there's no argument. It's on the iPad now.
Yeah, I think that's true. And that's why I think this is such a great move for Nintendo and why they needed to do it for so long, because they're going to make a ton of money off creating like these games, and they're also going to be introducing, it's like the iPod, right? They're going to be introducing an audience that may not have any exposure to what they have to offer. And so many times when the iPod was really popular, I would hear people with PCs try it, or they would try an iPhone later on. And then they would love it so much that they would start buying into the other products that Apple sold, because they were exposed to that really wonderful experience that you get when you use Apple products. And it's the same for Nintendo.
That's where I think the problem is you have to buy Nintendo hardware. With the games coming to iOS, you're just buying their software, you know?
Yeah, and I think that for to a certain extent, that's probably going to be true. That people will just, you know, leave it at that. They'll play on the iPad, they'll play on the iPhone. But there will be people who will be more interested in seeing whatever else Nintendo has to offer, and maybe will go check out a Wii U. I mean, I'm a huge Nintendo fan. I don't even own a Wii U. It's kind of a wacky console. They have gone off on this tangent with these consoles.
Do you think this is going to make you buy a Wii U eventually? Because that's your whole argument, is these games coming to iOS is going to make that people go and buy their consoles. But do you feel like that's going to happen for you if Mario comes to iPhone?
It would have to have some really great hook with the console.
I think, I mean, they need a new console too, you know?
They need a new console.
Some really cool features that go with it. Well, but I just don't see it working. Like, oh, this is going to be an avalanche to the Wii U now.
Yeah, I don't think that's probably going to happen either. Nintendo has other problems too. Like, their online experience is just years and years behind Xbox and behind PlayStation, so you don't get to play online with your friends as easily. Anyway, this is not a video game show, but we could turn it into one right now if you guys want. We could talk about PlayStation next.
Dan would love that.
Anyway, I think it's beneficial for both Nintendo and obviously for Apple, because Apple is going to make big bucks, and it's gonna be a boon for their ecosystem to have Mario in the iTunes, you know, or in the App Store. You go in there and all of a sudden there's Mario, there's Luigi, there's all these great Nintendo characters. It kind of validates them, not that they needed it, as a mainstream gaming platform. You know, they're not just
totally
touch games.
Yeah.
So in that regard, and kids are going to get their hands on games. It's going to be fantastic. Okay, well, let's move on from video games. I want to pose you guys a question. I read this on Reddit, and I wanted to get your takes on it. Somebody was asking if the new MacBook signals the end of the MacBook Air. So when Apple wanted a way to introduce a smaller computer with no moving parts years ago, they introduced the MacBook Air because it was a new concept, right? It's really thin, doesn't have a DVD drive, it doesn't have a hard drive, it's just all digital. And now with the MacBook kind of seems like it is what the MacBook Air intended to be. It's slim, has a Retina display, which is what everyone was waiting for. It has one USB ports. And I'm kind of curious, do you guys think in, I don't know, 1 to 3 years, the MacBook Air is still even going to exist? Leander, what do you think?
The MacBook Air? Yeah, I think so. I think it's specialist.
Where does it fit into the product category system that they have going?
Oh, I'm sorry. You mean that? I thought you meant that. I'm keep confusing the new one. You know, I keep calling it in my mind the MacBook Air.
Right.
So you mean the MacBook Air as it currently is, like with a couple of USB ports?
Well, yeah. You know, like the 11-inch, the 13-inch, with all the ports and the non-Retina displays. Do you think those are going to be around in 1 to 3 years?
It doesn't have all the ports. It has two USB ports.
Is that all it has? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's got a power and two USB ports. I mean, I've got one and I've been using it for years and. Yeah, I'm totally no. I mean that you know. I think it's clear that the ports are going to go away.
The machine itself will still be around? Why do they still need the MacBook Air when the MacBook is pretty much everything that the MacBook Air has intended to be.
Right. Yeah. No, I think it will go away. Yeah.
Okay. Buster, what do you think?
Yeah, I thought, didn't we cover this last week?
Maybe.
I feel like I already said this. I don't know. I said that in my opinion piece about it, that, yeah, I definitely wouldn't be surprised if it's gone in 2 or 3 years.
So 2 or 3 years, we'll just have the MacBook Pro and then the MacBook, you think?
Yeah, because that's the way it used to be.
Right, exactly. And, you know, the MacBook Air is a great brand. I wonder if they would resurrect it for anything.
Well, possibly. That's the other thing you think about. Like, you know, maybe they could do like a detachable keyboard with the MacBook Air. I don't know. I mean, the new MacBook is so thin already and super portable. That's the only way I think they could continue the MacBook Air line, is if they just make it even more portable than that somehow.
The only thing is the... And we don't know this for sure yet because we haven't seen enough data to really kind of make any judgment. But the new MacBook doesn't seem to be as powerful as the MacBook Air.
Right.
So that kind of sucks, because if you want to buy into the whole thin, if you want to buy a thin computer, now you have to have one that's not as powerful as something that you have on the market today.
If you want the thinnest Apple computer, sure. But I mean, the MacBook Air is still around and they're pretty thin. You know,
yeah,
they don't have a Retina display, but they're still really nice.
But eventually they won't be.
Right.
Is what you guys are saying. So at that point, they need to have like a model that's slim and somewhat powerful.
Yeah. I think in a few years, that will be probably the most compelling Apple computer.
Well, you know, I just sort of wonder, like, I haven't worried about, you know, the power of the processor for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, I don't do anything special, right? I just, you know, surf the web and you know, do email and stuff like that. So I'm not doing anything heavy duty. But, you know, the biggest limiting factor for me is opening 3,000 tabs in a browser.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, I'm more worried about, like, the problem for me is always the amount of RAM and battery life and portability. And I haven't thought about like the speed of the processor for years. It just doesn't cross my radar at all. So I think for me that this is perfect. You know, it's like it hits all the right, you know, notes.
And it comes with like 8 gigabytes of RAM base, which the MacBook Air I think only comes with 4.
4, yeah, unless you upgrade it to 8, I think. But you have to do that when you buy it.
Right, exactly.
You can't do it later. Yeah, and I got 4, and now my thing's like, you know, I constantly find that it's always spinning.
Right.
The other thing is, it has. Do you know think about, you know, that turbo boost technology where they say it can be boosted to like, you know, 3.5 gigahertz?
Are you kidding me? I know everything there is to know. What was it? What is it that you'd like to know about turbo boost?
Well, you know, it's a two gigahertz chip, right? But it has turbo boost, so when you need it, the operating system will
crank
kick
up
it
the
up.
Juice, right.
Overclock it on demand is what I read, and I'd actually read, you know, I don't know, because I don't have a machine that has this, but you know, a couple of things I saw was pretty positive about it. Said it worked pretty well.
I mean, it does if you need a short term boost, but if you're going to be working with, you know, processor intensive applications, the MacBook's not really going to be for you, which means you don't have a portable computing option anymore. Maybe they're going to fix this. I'm sure Apple has already thought about all this and has an entire product line in the wings waiting, you know, to satiate everyone who might be like looking for a, you know, a thin computer, a lightweight computer that also has significant processing power. It probably won't be cheap. It's going to be one of those like, you know, $300, $200-$300 options. As soon as you start optioning these computers, they get so expensive so fast, especially like RAM and processors.
Yeah.
It's always like $200, $300. And then all of a sudden you've got a computer that costs $2,000 again, which is, I was trying to get a new computer that is not $2,000, because my last MacBook, which is the 15-inch, was like, I think like $2,400.
Yeah, right.
That's a freaking fortune. That's like 3 times more than my car is worth. Maybe 4.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on. I want to thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode. And Leander, as a FreshBooks user, why don't you tell us how it benefits you in your life and why you have continued using it all this time?
Well, I have to send one invoice every month to this one particular client, and I just got it set up. You know, it's basically the same invoice. I have to just change a couple of numbers and then hit send, and that's it. And that's what I like about it, because it's so easy. You know, like in the past, I was doing invoices like in Pages and in Word.
I used to do that same thing. It's the worst.
Even if you have a template, I mean, it would take forever. Right. And then there was always, I never had the template set up right, so I always have to change the address as well. Something dumb like that, right?
And then you forget to change stuff, so you're sending invoices to clients with the names for other clients.
And I had all these different things set up, you know, like the name of the invoice number, but also the project and, you know, whatever. There was a whole bunch of sort of data you had to fill in.
Yeah.
It was always just like a headache. So that's what I like about FreshBooks is, even though I kind of, you know, for my billing anyway, I get bills too. Like people send me FreshBooks invoices but you know, as a using it to bill other people, you know, once you set it up once and if you're billing the same client, it's easy to do. And in fact, I cloned it as well from another invoice. So that was dead easy. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just really, really, it's they boiled it down. So it's, you know, you don't have to like keep doing all this data input, which I really hate. So
I do too. And actually, I do the same thing. If I need to create a new invoice, I just copy one that I've already created and then change some of the information. So that way, not only does it make it easier, but it eliminates mistakes, right? Because if you're constantly going in there and hammering on the keyboard, it makes it so that you could, you know, accidentally change something that you didn't mean to. The other thing is, and as a FreshBooks user, this has been really great for me, is their iPhone app is fantastic. It's, I mean, you could literally, if you wanted to, never use FreshBooks on your computer. You could run your entire business from your iPhone or from your iPad. They've put a lot of attention into the app, and like FreshBooks, you know, via your Mac online, it's very well designed and easy to use. So you can navigate around, you can create invoices, you can mark invoices as paid. I mean, everything that you would want to do to, you know, facilitate, you know, your invoicing and get paid is all included. And not only that, but if you ever want to send a paper invoice to somebody, because everything's online, right? Like no one wants to get paper invoices anymore. But every once in a while, you might run into a client who maybe is not technology savvy or is just not really paying you. And you're like,
yeah,
I have two options here. I have to either go over there and break their thumbs and accost them in front of their family members. And I'm not opposed to doing that. I think that's a great way to get your money.
Gets business done.
Gets business done. But, you know, it's not plan A. You got to save that for like plan B.
Yeah.
Maybe plan C. But if you want to send a paper invoice, one click, boom, FreshBooks will send a paper invoice to that client for you. And it's just like bill pay, you know, where you just don't have to worry about anything. And you can just, you know, send something without having to postmark it, write the address down on it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I do that with my bank. You know, my bank has to send a check to somebody every month. And I love it because you can set it up in the bank's interface and then they'll cut the check and send it out physically. Mm-hmm. And it's done every month. And this is exactly the same system, right? You know, you set it up once if you want to send recurring invoices or, you know, they'll take care of it. You don't have to get all that horrible sticky screw on your mouth.
I don't know how Leander is sealing envelopes. He barely gets covered in goo. Everything's sticky afterwards.
There's a disgusting after effect on my tongue.
You know what I think, Leander? I think you accidentally bought those envelopes that have like the adhesive strips on them and then you didn't realize that.
That might be true.
So you're like, take off the wax paper, then you're licking it and stuff. Yeah.
Is that why it sticks to my tongue? Is that
that's what it is? Right. Stuck to your clothes. You're covered.
I think what it is, I've got some really old envelopes I've had around for a long time.
Yeah, well, you've been using FreshBooks for a long time, so you didn't need them. Anyway, yeah. FreshBooks is fantastic. That's why we all use it. And if you have a business where you are needing to get paid from a one client, 10 clients, FreshBooks can handle it all. They have plans for all those kinds of client types. Head on over to FreshBooks.com/CultCast, and please enter CultCast in the How Did You Hear About Us section so FreshBooks knows that you heard about them via us. And as always, anytime anyone ever asks you how you found out about something, how you discovered, you know, the outfit that you're wearing, just tell them CultCast. That's a great way to help us out. Okay, let's keep the wagon rolling here. I think I asked you guys this before the show, but I'm going to ask it again for the sake of the show so our listeners can hear. Has anyone used the new Force Touch trackpad?
Nope.
I haven't used it either.
No, I haven't used it either. No. I want to go down to the store and check it out, though.
Yeah, I kind of want to do the same thing, because when they first started talking about it, I kind of felt like it was slightly gimmicky. Did you guys have that impression?
No, I thought it looked cool.
You thought it looked cool. Okay. I just kind of was like, it's Force Touch. I, you know, it's haptic engine. I thought it looked cool as well, but I just kind of wondered how well it was actually going to work.
Yeah.
So apparently it's been getting rave reviews online. Everyone who has used it, I have not read a single negative thing about it. Everyone has been talking about how when you use it, it actually feels very three-dimensional. Mm-hmm. And now I kind of want one pretty bad. I feel like my technology and my current trackpad is super antiquated.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it's going to work with the Apple Watch, you know, with the haptic engine, whether you can, like, you know, send heartbeats to people's watches and stuff like that, or tips on Morse code.
You mean send it to their trackpad?
Oh. Yeah.
What?
It's going to bust their heartbeat on your trackpad?
Oh, yeah. You need to fire off an email to Tim Cook about that.
Well, is it gonna be open up to developers so they can, you know, do all sorts of kind of rumbling effects in games and?
Well, one thing I was heard about, or I think I saw Vitici posting about this on Mac Stories, was the idea that it could eventually be developed to provide like tactile feedback on UI, like you're scrolling over like a screen and like it vibrates when you hit a button, like suddenly.
Oh, cool, right.
To kind of make it, you know, like make the screen feel more multidimensional. So that could be cool.
Yeah, kind.
So apparently, force clucking. Force cluck. That's a whole. That's something that farmers do. I'm really into farming. Yeah, not appropriate for this show. But force clicking a file will open Quick Look, which I use all the time. So that would be handy to be able to do it without hitting the space bar. And then also, force clicking a word will actually look it up. Which I also use all the time. That's one of my favorite features about the trackpad, is just being able to tap it and look up words. And then I think they mentioned this one at the keynote. You can force touch at different pressures, and it will scrub through QuickTime video faster the harder you press.
Yeah.
And I was reading, I think on Apple Insider, they said they were blown away by the new trackpad, and the effect. I think they said the effect is stunning. Quite a phrase. So now I'm really jonesing to get down there and actually try it out, because everyone that I've read who has actually used it has said that it's really effective and you feel like you're using a three-dimensional trackpad and not just something that's flat on your Mac. But everyone also says that it makes your current technology just feel like garbage and you don't want to
so
go back
to
it.
Try it.
Yeah, exactly. Have you pre-ordered your 13-inch, Buster? I know you were thinking about getting one. No?
No, I don't think so. I might just wait to see if they ever redesign them.
If they're redesigning them, it's going to be quite a while, probably.
I don't know this. Yeah, it could be a great product pipeline this year.
But, yeah. Well, I think Tim Cook said the best product pipeline he's ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, he says that at every financial call. But, I mean, if they just updated it and gave it the new Force Touch trackpad, it's probably going to be, I mean, at least 10 to 12 months before they update it again.
Yeah, I can survive on a MacBook Air.
Yeah, that's a great computer too. And you might have one of the last ones, who knows. Okay, well, sure. Let's talk about this potential Apple streaming television service that's reportedly coming in June. Buster, this might be the TV service that's
the TV service we've been waiting for.
The services to end all services. Would you care to elaborate?
Well, supposedly they're in talks with Fox, ABC, and CBS to carry a bunch of free streaming channels. I'm guessing that's going to include ESPN, because ABC is part of the ESPN family owns
it. Oh, it is. Okay.
And Disney. So, I mean, included, like, you know, so it'd be $20 to $40, which I don't know. That sounds pretty pricey for up to
$40, I feel like, is too much.
Right?
I don't feel like it can't be more than $30, in my opinion. That would just be too much money.
Yeah, I could get down on $30, but after, I think I pay $20 for Sling TV, which is, I don't know if it's really worth it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's supposedly going to launch later this year.
But that's you were just speaking about Sling TV. How many channels do they give you?
Maybe like 15 or
okay,
10.
Okay, so you're paying 20 for 15. And so Apple, the Wall Street Journal came out with a report about this, and they were saying it's going to have about 25 channels.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of on par for $30 to $40. I think it needs to be 30. I don't think they can charge 40.
Well, 40 is like kind of basic cable, right? Isn't that what it starts at?
Yeah, but it needs to be cheaper than basic cable. Don't you think, Leander?
I think so. Yeah.
It's not clear whether it includes HBO or not, right, for that price.
No,
I'm doubting it's going to include HBO.
I'd be shocked.
Well, then, what's the, you know, what exactly is the advantage then, right? So, you know, if they're going to offer you kind of a basic cable like service that includes HBO,
that's the same price as basic cable.
Yeah. So right. You know, what's the, and then you've got to on top of that, you also have to have a broadband connection, right? So you still have to maintain either your cable connection or your DSL.
Right.
So that adds another what? What's that? $60 a month or $40 to $60 a month?
Depending on where you live. Yeah, something like that.
So I wasn't really clear, you know, like, well, so what's exactly is the advantage here? You know,
you can watch it on your iPhone and your iPad too, probably.
Well, that would be a huge advantage, right? I mean, you would all of a sudden have access to all these channels across every single Apple device that you own.
But you can do that already with like the Xfinity app, which actually is pretty good. From Comcast, so
yeah, I mean, I guess you can.
But people hate Comcast,
and their app sucks.
Point of it.
You know what I hate about the Xfinity app, about the Comcast UI for television, period, is they always show you a ton of crap that you don't actually have access to, and then you go on the Xfinity app, and it wants you to log in because it needs to see if you're subscribing to that channel. And for the life of me, I cannot figure out why they don't just cut all that garbage out and just show you the freaking stuff that you actually have access to. Why are you showing me all this stuff?
Well, you were supposed to do that. You're going to your favorites and you had them one at a time.
Yes.
All the stuff you want. I know, it's crazy. Yeah, it's really bad. It's horrible.
Like, that's a realistic workflow. Well, go through your 600 channels and favorite the ones that you actually watch. Like, what? Well,
they haven't changed the UI on Comcast for like, what, 15 years? 10, 15 years or something? It's mad.
All the interfaces really on television and on all the television systems I've used have not been great. I mean, even TiVo. TiVo's pretty good, but even TiVo is not fantastic. So you would get that level of you would get a great UI and you would only get to see the stuff that you actually have access to. So that would make it a lot more convenient. It could be as simple as that. But I hear your point, Lander, is they need to make it compelling. Like, they can't just replace what you already have access to for the same price via Comcast, right? Because what's the reason to buy it?
Yeah, I don't know, unless there's some kind of hardware involved. I mean, one of the big things that, you know, people were talking about with the Apple TV was simplifying that whole, you know, juggling between different inputs for different devices and then dealing with horrific interfaces for, you know, whatever device you're using, be it the DVD or the cable box. And, you know, like, you turn the Apple TV on and then there's one integrated interface that will give you access to everything, you know, through one interface, which I think is kind of compelling.
That's actually kind of what the Xbox One does.
Oh, right.
That's exactly what the Xbox One does. You pipe your TV in through the Xbox and then it brings it into one unified experience.
Yeah, and then you can access a whole bunch of other services too, right? You know, Pandora and
And you could be using one service and then just automatically switch to another with, you know, very little hassle.
Yeah, right. Well, I guess this is what the Apple TV would do, right? Because you would get live TV through it as well as all this subscription stuff and HBO and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, presumably you wouldn't have to go to a separate input to get to your Apple TV. You would just use your Apple TV for all of your TV viewing.
Right.
And whatever else you're doing, yeah.
And not to mention, it's not going to be just about TV, and we've talked about this before, is if you want to have, so Apple has HomeKit, right, which enables devices to communicate with your iPhones, that your iPhone can control these devices, but it only works when you're on your own network, so you have to be connected to your Wi-Fi. Well, the Apple TV, it looks like, is becoming the kind of the hub of your home, so that if you're outside of your network, you can actually communicate with devices on the inside of your network if you have an Apple TV. So now it's not going to just be a, you know, a television system for watching channels, but it seems like it's going to be unifying control of television and your home into one device that is going to do all sorts of crazy cool things in the future.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
And now that Apple has dropped the price, you know, from $99 to $69, maybe they're kind of they're trying to entice people into getting an Apple TV, or as I scooped last week, major scoop. People started doing hashtag Scoopmaster on Twitter, which I don't think is an incorrect hashtag for the Scoopist. But, and I'll bring it up again in case you missed last week's show. With the price drop, with all the stuff that Apple's doing with television, with the HomeKit stuff, to me, I was just kind of putting it out there. Maybe Apple is working on a higher priced Apple TV type system that is going to do a lot more than what the current generation of Apple TV does. It's going to be more robust in some way. I could be totally wrong about that. Normally my scoops are pretty accurate, but I'm just kind of throwing that out there to you. You do with it what you want, put it in your pocket, save it for a rainy day. And if they actually end up doing that, then I can rub it in everyone's faces and say that I called it, even though it was just totally a guess. But Apple TV can become like the control center of your home. So you could integrate with your Apple Watch. You could, you know, talk to Siri and give it some command that likely it won't understand. But hypothetically speaking, yeah. You say, Siri, unlock my doors when I get home. And via your Apple TV, you get there and your sprinklers turn on.
Right, and all your doors are unlocked. Yeah.
All your windows are rolled down and thieves are taking everything.
You can kind of do that now, right? If you've cobbled together your own system and use Siri to do this, that, and the other. But yeah, you know, it's intriguing. I think they're all going to be big deals in the next couple of years or so.
Yeah, I think Apple TV has a much bigger role to play in the next couple of years.
Yeah, right. And especially as a hub for HomeKit.
Yeah.
Exactly. I ordered one of those Amazon Echoes. Unfortunately, it hasn't come yet. You know, the thing that listens to you.
You ordered one of those?
Yeah, I was really curious about it.
I was too, but I was reading about the Amazon Echo, and they actually gave me my pre-order thing, right? And they're like, you can order now. And I just couldn't get myself to buy it, because what does it do that's helpful for you?
Well, that's what I was kind of curious to find out. You know, I was definitely seduced by the cheesy video they made.
Where the dad is just like the idiot, and everyone's trying to like...
Yeah,
I know. Teach them right. How to use
Dad,
it.
Come on, Dad. But it's doing the homework and it answers questions about the weather and whatever a bunch of other stuff. So I don't know. It's intriguing looking. Plus, I kind of like the idea. We just ran out of some tea, you know, at home, which is a huge crisis in my house.
Everything stops.
Right.
At the Caney Home.
I would like to be able to go, hey, you know, Echo, order me some, reorder my Tetley, tea bags.
Oh, that actually would be cool.
Yeah. So I don't know. Plus, you know, it was $99, I think, right, with my Prime subscription.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I kind of got there's also a professional obligation to look at the latest and greatest technology.
Yeah, I know. So, that's kind of why I felt compelled to buy it too. But in the end, I just couldn't do it. I was like, this thing looks like a total experiment, and I just don't think I would be able to get any use from it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it does is like play music and order stuff off Amazon.
Well, it's a bunch of services, right? So it depends what they turn on the other end, and it's, you know, it's got some AI. It's an artificially intelligent personal assistant, much like Siri. So. Uh-huh. I think, you know, Amazon's not to be underestimated, and they're really good at, like, you know, big data, big services.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if anybody's going to be able to, like, sort of crack this, I mean, you know, they're one of the contenders anyway. It's not a bunch of clowns. It's not some just fly-by-night startup. So it'd be intriguing to see how it works. I mean, you know, they can connect. Like, if you read about what Siri is capable of doing in the lab and the technology that it came from, you know, because it was a DARPA project originally, and the company that Apple bought it from... had a bunch of like really, they claimed anyway, advanced capabilities for Siri that, you know, we've yet to see rolled out yet. And there was a lot more conversational and a lot more, it had a lot more contextual intelligence.
I hope one of the advanced features is understanding what the flip you're actually saying.
Yeah, exactly. There's that problem too.
Going back to this Apple television streaming thing real fast, I do want to run this by you guys because I thought this was a little bit strange. So the New York Post is writing that Apple's actually getting more luck getting content partners because they are offering, they're dangling a carrot in front of them, and the carrot is your data. So according to the Post, they are saying Apple is offering to let people who give their content to them your data, so who you are, what you've watched, and when you've watched it, in order to tempt them to come on to Apple service, because that's something that they have tried to get, these networks have tried to get from Amazon and Netflix, and Amazon and Netflix have refused to give them that information. And Apple has also given them control off, you know, on when their ads are played in the actual content. But Tim Cook has repeatedly said, you are not our product. Can you guys imagine that this is actually true?
It's hard to believe.
Yeah, it's hard to believe, isn't it?
It goes against that whole ethos of, we're not here in the business of selling your data.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess we're not selling your data. Well, we're not
except
selling
to the TV company. It's just the TV company.
Just most of it, y'all.
Okay, now it's the internet service. Okay, now it's the government. Okay. So, I mean, it's a slippery slope, though, too. That's the other thing I think you have to be concerned about.
Would you guys be okay if they could land, if Apple could get AMC on board, you know, all the best channels, MTV, VH1 for the Leanderkinis out there. Oh, sorry, CMT for Leander, the country AMC, music station. Yeah, okay. Yeah. BBC. If they could lock down all those channels and give you a great price, but the cost was they sold your data to those networks, would you be okay with that?
Well, it depends, you know, I mean, depends what data. I mean, if it's just like what show I'm watching and where I pause and where I fast forward, and you know, which is what I think they do, which is what pretty sure what Comcast is doing anyway.
And which pornos you're watching.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the thing. Your bill comes and there's a bunch of, you know,
exactly
pseudonyms for on it. Well, I think, you know, was there any talk about, you know, the things you're searching for and, you know, the kind of thing, the interaction you might have if it does have Siri built in? I mean, that's where I'd be a little more nervous about it.
You mean as far as giving them that data, giving networks that data?
Yeah, well, and you know, probably advertisers, and whether Apple would use it to themselves. You know, I mean, like Google's already mining Gmail, right, for stuff and to put right into the Maps product and right stuff like that. And I mean, people are doing this like crazy anyway. But if it's into your living room, and they start, you know, and you start chatting to Siri about, you know, buying a new Snuggie. And then that data gets to back to NBC, and they start putting Snuggie adverts on, you know, in the middle of Walking Dead or whatever, you know, whatever you're watching. I mean, this is how I can see them doing it, yeah?
Actually, yeah. That's actually, Leander, you're in the wrong line of work. I think you need to go work for the advertisers. That's actually genius. You're like, what you need to do is listen to everything they say and then advertise them those products while they're watching the shows.
Exactly. This is exactly this is what they do on the web already. You know, when you surf around and you've been on Amazon, you've been looking for some new slippers, and then you start seeing slipper ads everywhere. Well, you know, the bringing that web tracking technology to all your other technologies, I think, would be kind of odd.
Well, I kind of feel like that's going to happen eventually anyway. And me personally, I don't really see what the big deal is. I mean, I don't think I would want them to give them my name and my address. And here's like what Airfun watches, you know, every Saturday night. But if they're like, here's what user 1G55209 watches, and it's totally anonymous and not connected to me in any way, I guess for me, I would much rather watch a directed ad, something that I actually care about. I would rather know about the Snuggie than, you know, some totally off-base product. I don't want to see some stupid product that I would never buy in a million years and have to watch that commercial 10 times.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, that's true. I mean? I think that's a good point. I actually quite like seeing that, you know, ads of stuff I've been looking at. But the trouble is it's kind of clumsy. You know, usually they don't bring you alternative products, right? Mm-hmm. It's usually quite specific. It's usually specifically what you looked at on Amazon.
Right.
You know, not ads for other things in the category. If it worked well like that, you know, like if you're looking for a new tent or something or and it showed you a whole bunch of different tents, that stuff that you'd never actually considered, then you could see how it actually would be useful.
Right. Like if I'm looking at Speedos on Amazon, I want to see the whole range of risque swimming attire. Right, I don't want to just see the Speedo that I looked at. I know it's covered in sequins. I know it's blue. I know everything about that particular model. Right? I need to see what else you have to sell me. That's the stuff that I want to see.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's wrap up with this. Buster, I'm going to go to you with this. I think this is totally wacky. So we haven't talked about Yahoo, I don't think, ever. So this might be the first time, possibly the last time. Yes, Yahoo still exists. And some news came out this week at South by Southwest that said they're trying to kill off passwords with on-demand codes, Buster.
Tell
me more.
So you know how two-factor authentication works, where you sign into your account, and then before you can get inside,
it sends
you a password to your phone? It basically works like that, only you just don't put in the password at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So it's even a little bit less secure than two-factor authentication.
So it basically just puts a cookie on your machine so it knows who you are, and then...
Yeah, it's like when you create your account, like you associate it with your phone number, and then so instead of logging in with your password, it just sends like a new password to your phone, and then you just, okay, that's what it is, and you type that in and log in with it.
So you go to the site, click a button, it sends you a code, you wait for the code to arrive, you get the code, you type the code on the website, you get in the website.
Yeah.
I mean, it just sounds so streamlined. Who wouldn't want to use this?
Yeah, I don't know.
This is way easier than just typing your password.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it sounds like the worst way to log in I have ever heard. Sure, it's secure, but it's so complicated. Why would anyone want to do this?
Well, do you ever use two-factor on your... Because I use two-factor with Gmail and iCloud, and it's a pain to log in. Like,
it's such a pain in the arse.
You know, you have to wait for the code to come over to your phone, and you got to try and get it in before the message disappears, you know. But
so let me give you guys another option, and I think this option is probably even better than the Yahoo option. Have you guys ever downloaded like an authenticator app? So there's apps out there that kind of work with two-factor authentication, and you can authenticate the app via the services that you use. Like the one that I use most often is called Duo Mobile, D-U-O Mobile.
Yeah.
And it's free. And so you connect it to the services that you're using, and that way when you go to one of those services, instead of texting you a code, you just boot up the app, and you can click a button on the app, and it will generate a code for you right there. So you just enter that code in, and I don't know how the technology works, but obviously it's authenticated you already in some way. So once it creates that code, you just enter that code in, and then boom, you're off and running. Mm-hmm. But even that is a huge pain in the arse. Isn't two-factor authentication just the worst thing in the world? It's the worst thing in the world. No one wants to enter anything into a website when they go there, let alone two things. Let alone having to wait for a text message.
If you do it properly, it only does it when you do it from a new device, right? So
is that the way it's supposed to work? Because I feel like I get asked all the time.
Yeah, and you probably have some configuration thing then, if that's happening.
I mean, I am off and running in private mode. Maybe that's the problem. Do you think that can be it?
That might be it.
So the way it's supposed to work, Leander, is you're saying, oh, you go with a new device, it doesn't recognize the device, and so it does it once, and then you're good to go from then on?
Yeah.
That never happens for me. That happens for you?
Well, you know, I'm on some of the a lot of the Apple services, right, and a lot of the bank things.
Yeah.
So
I'm
not
doing something wrong.
The whole paradigm of passwords and stuff is messed up anyway. I mean, I was really hoping that we could move beyond that with fingerprint, Touch ID.
Or, you know, what might end up happening is, I mean, Touch ID on the Mac would be fantastic. But you authenticate with your Mac, right, and you're wearing the Apple Watch. And so because the Apple Watch knows who you are, and when you get close to your computer, it just automatically logs you into anything that needs a password.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
You heard it here. We have consensus. I'm gonna fire off an email to Tim Cook. We're going to get started on this code. In the meantime, though, I think we should go ahead and wrap it up there. I think Buster has officially fallen asleep. Buster, are you there?
Oh, dude, sorry.
he's deep in thought. He's stroking his beard. He's rubbing richly scented oils into his beard. He's thinking about all the great points we've made on this episode. That's all the CodeCast we have for you guys this week. If you want to come hear our other nuggets of wisdom, we have them freely available on Twitter. Buster's BST3R, Leander's LKaney, I'm at Arifon. And of course, for all the best news, reviews, and how-tos of Apple, make sure you're following Cult of Mac. This has been the CultCast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the CultCast come out every Thursday night, Leander. Every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone.
I don't want to make that Friday morning.
I want to thank everyone for listening. And we'll see you guys next time, which will be on a Thursday. Not a Tuesday. Not a Monday. It's going to be Thursday. Odds are. But no,
we had this. We had this new tree outside on the sidewalk, and it was literally, you know, like piles of shit on piles of shit. There was a little mountain of dog shit down there because some scumbag, you know, doesn't clean up. There's a couple of them don't clean up after their dogs.
Uh huh.
So I put some. I built this little rickety fence, which my wife immediately ran into and smashed up around it, and then. Well, this tree guy we know said, gave us a piece of advice. He said, stick a 2-liter plastic bottle of water by the tree. That'll stop him peeing and pooing.
Really?
Have you ever heard that?
No, that's the first time I've ever heard that.
Just a bottle. He said it's a trick from Mexico City. That's what they did.
Why would that do anything?
Haven't got a clue, but apparently he said, swore up and down, it'll stop it to cold.
So you just never have to put worry about some water there and then they avoid it?
Yeah.
Weird.
Just a regular soda bottle filled with water.
And you could keep the cap on.
Well, my wife put it down. I noticed this morning that someone had kicked over. It's completely empty.
It's kicked over and there's a turd on top of it.
Yeah, so I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know if that's as effective as you might have heard. The dog kicked it over and took a dump on it.
Right. Drank it and then...
Yeah, right. Which hydrated him enough for a big turd.
Right. I don't know if he said it was like whether you should put the lid on or not. I guess, you know, we'll try that next.